Good evening. Can you hear me? I'm not tall enough like John. Okay, well, I would like to thank the organizers, especially Rob Wiedemann, for giving me the privilege to speak on this occasion. I feel truly honored. This is perhaps the most significant yet humbling talk I have ever been asked to give. Before I start, I would like to acknowledge the presence of Bob's loving family, Liz, Jenny, John, Nate, and Elspeth. Bob O'Neill was recognized worldwide as an authority on biological control. The body of knowledge he built during his lifetime continues to be a source of ideas and inspiration in many parts of the world. I cannot do justice to him in the few short minutes I have, so I'll attempt to summarize just one area of his work, and that is on the spine soldier bug. Podesis maculiventris, which is a common generalist predator found throughout North America. Podesis will always be special for me because I worked on this bug with Bob for my dissertation and continue to work on it today. Together with his many students, including Rob and myself, Bob's work on Podesis focused on three main areas. The first area is functional response and search strategy. In simple terms, functional response refers to how many prey a predator eats when given more prey to consume. And search strategy I will define as behavior meant to find and consume optimal numbers of prey. These studies are usually done in the laboratory under controlled field conditions, or under controlled conditions, but Bob was more interested in differences between lab and field results. In the lab, predators naturally ate more prey as more prey are provided, up to a limit. In the field, predators attack the relatively constant number of prey, regardless of the number of prey provided. Field attack rates were generally low, averaging about 0.5 attacks per day. Like in the lab, the estimated area the predators searched declined as prey density increased. However, in contrast to the laboratory, the decline in search could not be attributed to the accumulated time predators spend handling prey because they attacked so few prey in the field. This strategy may result from balancing energy costs and predation risks with the benefits gained from attacking prey. Also, the strategy may reflect the budgeting of time between searching and other time-consuming activities such as reproduction. This leads to another key research focus, trade-offs. All living organisms must balance limited resources against competing demands. In the case of Podesis, Bob's research focused on trade-offs in body weights, egg loads, and fat reserves under conditions of food scarcity. Under different feeding regimens in the laboratory, Podesis responded to food stress by conserving energy reserves in the fat body and diverting them away from reproduction. Regardless of prey species used, starved insects weighed less and laid fewer eggs, but also lived longer and had greater fat reserves. The trade-off between reproduction and survival may allow Podesis to survive natural conditions better when prey becomes scarce. We also found some evidence that this trade-off occurs in the field. Finally, Bob synthesized all the combined knowledge and Podesis into computer simulation models. Some of the insights gained here were that reproductive and survivorship characteristics of the prey have a relatively large impact on pest density. Among predator characteristics, developmental rate and most reproductive parameters have a greater impact than do search parameters and survivorship. And plant growth rate has a greater impact than the initial size of the plants. Clearly, Bob has made a significant and lasting contribution to our understanding of predator biology and ecology, as well as biological control in general. He did so with a unique and exciting approach to entomological research, which I will attempt to summarize for those of you who did not have the fortune to be members of the O'Neill Laboratory. So I came up with a list called the top 10 things I learned in Bob O'Neill's laboratory. So to start off, this is my number 10. Biological organisms can adapt to sudden changes in climate. This was the first thing I learned in the O'Neill lab. I'm talking about graduate students who come from tropical countries like the Philippines, as shown here, the UUP Los Baños in the Philippines, and I arrive in West Lafayette, Indiana in January. Bob met me at the airport and invited me to spend my first night with his family. The next morning, with almost a foot of snow on the ground, he introduced me to graduate school life in the US, his research at Purdue University. This is number 9. A day of field work is not complete without stopping at Lean de Vries afterward. Bob was a very hard worker. He always gave his best effort and asked his students to do the same. Counting the numbers of eggs laid by Colorado potato beetles is a difficult and tedious job at any time. Doing so in the heat of Indiana potato fields is no fun. To ensure data quality, Bob would have two or three people counting the same plant with instructions that we could not move to the next until our egg counts matched. And miraculously, they did. We could. Yep, we could get our egg counts to match, but it was not easy. We would be rewarded afterwards by a quick trip to Lean de Vries for some milkshake or ice cream, and then we'd be ready for the next sampling day. Okay, this is number 8. The Julian date for July 14 is, anybody? Rob? 195. If you spend enough time in the O'Neill lab, you will learn the Julian date for Bob's birthday is 195. When analyzing or inputting data, he always called attention to this day. I had my first child when I worked in Bob O'Neill's lab. Michelle was born at about 7 p.m. on the evening of July 13, 1988. Bob was disappointed that I could not hold out a few more hours so that she could also be born on July 14. And he had suggested a few times that Robert or Roberta would be good names for for my child. So, despite this disappointment, Bob and Liz were the first to visit us in the hospital just hours after she was born. And this is during Michelle's baptism. So you see the people here and the whole brood is there. Okay. Number 7, you cannot develop insights into predation if your own stomach is empty. Bob loved food. He loved to cook, he loved to eat, and he enjoyed the company of people when eating. The annual O'Neill barbecue was a ritual, as were Thanksgiving and Christmas meals where he invited students, international guests, anyone who had no place to go for the holidays. Harry's Chocolate Shop was one of Bob's favorite hangouts and also where I first tasted hot wings. Number 6, you can learn from other people. Bob always had a diverse group of people in his lab from many different parts of the world with a wide range of cultures and beliefs. During my time there, we came from Brazil, India, Chile, Argentina, Zaire, Benin, Mexico, the Philippines, and the US. We learned from him and from each other. And I believe he also learned something from our countries from us. He organized lunchtime brown bag seminars in his lab, and for the entomology department, summer workshops and student presentations at local and national meetings. I was able to send one of my students at Florida A&M, Jeffrey Head, to spend the summer in Bob's lab under the Purdue Undergraduate Minority Summer Program. And Jeff is the one on the left. Okay, number five, you need to get your hands dirty. Bob always balanced theory and application, laboratory and field. He stressed the need for hands-on practical work, and although he didn't need to, he always was working in the field along with his students. That many of these same students continued to work in biological control, with some attaining prominent positions is testament to his legacy. We're down to number four. Before any scientific discussions, be prepared with knowledge about important current events. This applies especially to recent games involving the Boston Red Sox, New England Patriots, or Boston Celtics. Bob loved sports. He organized department sports teams and lunchtime gym sessions. Growing up in Massachusetts, he was a lifelong fan of the Red Sox, Patriots, and Celtics. His shouts of NBA, baby, NBA, during lunchtime pickup games are fondly remembered. He passed on his love of sports to his children, who attended college on soccer scholarships. He tolerated my husband, Benji, who was a fan of the Los Angeles Lakers. Okay, number three. Try not to let bureaucracy get in the way of research. Bob was never interested in the formalities and rules of academia or anywhere else for that matter. He used to have a filing cabinet labeled Admin BS. But at the same time, he appreciated the financial support provided by the administration to his students. He loved to be called simply as Bob. As his daughter Jenny has said, he was one of those people who cared nothing for clothes, status, or recognition. And if Rob Wiedemann fails to talk about it later, ask him to tell you the story about Bob and his mismatched socks. Okay, number two. You cannot do research without a sense of humor. Whereas analyzing data can be interesting and exciting, the daily grind of data collection is tedious and repetitive. You need a sense of humor to pass the time and to develop camaraderie in the lab. Bob had a well-known, almost childlike sense of humor that he shared with us and took the drudgery out of counting eggs and weighing insects. He made his lab a fun place to work. This leads to the last item on my list. Number one, and this is the top in the list. Don't take all this predation stuff too seriously. Bob never lost his sense of humor, but I think that what people don't know as much is something he told me long after I had left Purdue. His travels abroad had given him a new perspective, a realization that most people in other parts of the world were dealing with more immediate problems than abstract concepts in foraging theory. He felt he had led a fairly privileged life and needed to give back to his community and to the world as best as he could. He was a member of the West Lafayette Human Relations Committee and participated annually in the Hunger Hike and the Feast of the Hunter's Moon. Many times he would donate field harvest to local food banks or community pantries. He lived his life, and he instilled in his children and family with the need to give back. And that is the most important thing I learned from Bob O'Neill. I'd like to just acknowledge people that have helped me with the presentation. And thank you very much.